Hello, welcome to the Meclis, a Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen service at Radio Free Europe. In Tajikistan, civil society and political parties already under scrutiny. Now, government is cracking down against lawyers whose job is to defend NGOs and individuals in trouble. Recently, the troubling news are coming one after the other from Tajikistan. Today, we are discussing the recent wave of crackdown in the country on lawyers and what does it represent in terms of country's next move towards further isolation. To discuss the subject, I have Steve Severdlu, Human Rights Watch Central Asia researcher, who is usually based in Bishkek, but today is in California, United States. Marius Fossum, Central Asia representative of the Norwegian Helsinki Committee, who is based in Almaty. Always Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlag Awazi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, is joining me here in the studio. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Majlis.
Thank you.
In the recent report, Steve, you guys released last week, includes 7 specific cases involving lawyers who are in detention in Tajikistan. Let's briefly talk about those profiles before we jump in to the broader discussion.
Yes, well, thank you, Mohammed. This is an extremely important topic that doesn't get enough attention. We often talk about the crackdown on the opposition, on NGOs, but it's really impossible for civil society in any of these countries in Central Asia or in general to function without lawyers that can fulfill their profession, can go to court, and themselves not fear that they'll be put into prison for the clients that they choose. And Tajikistan has been crossing over a lot of boundaries recently, and this is just the latest one, as you mentioned. And, you know, I think it deserves note that some of the most fearless lawyers that have been around in Tajikistan for over a decade doing really important work, taking on the cases that we know about, are really feeling the pressure and are in prison, and even those outside of prison are feeling enormous pressure. One of the most famous human rights lawyers in Tajikistan is Buzurg Mayor Yorov, and his trial is about to continue tomorrow. He was a man that decided that he would stand up and be brave enough to say that he would represent the IRPT, the members of the banned and now declared a terrorist organization, the opposition party of Tajikistan. And within just a few days of saying that he would take on their representation, he himself was arrested. He was actually arrested the day that he told the public that he believed one of his clients, Said Umar Husseinov, the first deputy chairman of the IRPT, was being tortured himself in prison. So it was a quite dramatic day when he was arrested back in September 2016. Along with Buzurg Mayor Yorov, we have Shukrat Kudratov, who's a very well-known attorney, who was one of the legal team that represented the now-imprisoned opposition figures, Zaid Saidov. Shukrat Kudratov was also well-known for human rights cases, for taking on politically sensitive cases. He's been in prison now since he was arrested in June 2014. The International Commission of Jurists and other organizations inside Tajikistan have called him a human rights defender and have decried his imprisonment now. Along with him, you also have 2 other lawyers that worked with Yorov, Dilbar Dodojonova, Nuruddin Mahkamov. And then in addition to 4 imprisoned lawyers, there's actually 2 sons of another prominent attorney from Zaid Saidov's team, Firuz Tabarov and Daler Tabarov.
Right. These 7 cases, profiles, is there anything common about them, Marius?
Well, the common thing is that all the charges appear trumped up and in retaliation for these attorneys representing the opposition. Or in the case of the Tabarovs, in retaliation for their father representing opposition figure Zaid Saidov.
The fact that the lawyers are facing these charges, what does it indicate? Lawyers are getting active or regime is expanding its pressure? Bruce, how to read this?
I think the Tajik government just doesn't want any resistance to the to these court cases at all. It's very unfortunate because we already know that if you're arrested and charged with a crime, especially if you've run afoul of the authorities in some way, although the Constitution might say that you're innocent until proven guilty, actually pretty much the opposite is the truth. In the eyes of the Tajik courts and legal system, chances are you are guilty and you have to try to prove that you're innocent. So by having lawyers that are actually working to try to show that their clients are not guilty of these crimes, it prolonged these cases, I suppose, a little bit, gave them a little bit more publicity than they'd normally get. So you're basically defanging the defense for the accused. And by doing so, you just ensure a speedy trial and a quick conviction.
Steve, the pressure against lawyer seems not only to put them in jail. I read somewhere in your report that there is also a test being introduced that every lawyer has to go through. Is it in the process or it's already done case?
This has already happened, and this is another aspect of the crackdown, which is, I guess you could say, for lack of a better word, less sexy, which is that, and this has happened across Central Asia. It's worth noting that it happened in Uzbekistan about 6 or 7 years ago in a very similar fashion, but the government has essentially demolished the Independent Bar Association for Lawyers as we know it and made it subservient to the executive branch and required all lawyers into Tajikistan to retake the bar exam. So that means people have been practicing 15 years, 20 years, have to now essentially fear losing their licenses, retake the bar exam, and that test can be rejiggered or manipulated in a way to get rid of anybody that the government deems to be disloyal or suspicious. So we've heard reports that the questions on the test have to do with sometimes very silly things that have nothing to do with the law, that would be really arbitrary questions in any bar exam. And I myself have taken the bar exam in the U.S., and it's already, not an easy thing to do. And so, this is something that's causing a lot of stress and already resulted, we don't have a lot of specifics, but we do know that about 90 people or 89 lawyers have actually not passed this new exam out of about 500. And we don't know exactly how many of those people could be considered opposition or politically independent, but it's still a significant number.
Marius, do we know anything about the inside of these test documents? What are the questions being asked?
Well, as you said, we don't know too many specifics. Reports have reached us that you have to answer questions about history, culture, and of Tajikistan. In Eurasian, it reported, I think, that one of the questions were, when did the first train run in Tajikistan? So it's pretty absurd questions for a bar. Yes.
Bruce, what all this means? What is the goal behind it?
Like I said, the Tajik government is, they do have some reason to be worried. We've talked about the economic situation and how it's deteriorating. And we know there's a lot of corruption in Tajikistan, and very, very few officials would bear their financial records would not bear close scrutiny. And a lot of their personal behavior probably wouldn't either. So by having these people out, one fell swoop, although it's taken several years, but they managed to get rid of the opposition. They managed to get rid of any possibility for the opposition to defend themselves in court. And now they're also, people who are seen as sympathetic to the opposition, or at least in the eyes of the Tajik government. Just because you're defending someone doesn't mean you agree with what they did or what they stand for. You're just trying to defend them on the grounds of, should they be put in jail or not? Did they actually infringe upon the law, commit some violation or something like that? And now the authorities are worried to deprive opposition figures and government critics of even having the benefit of fair legal representation. So from now on, whatever the Tajik government says is the truth is going to be not beyond dispute, but you'd have to be a very brave individual to try to come forward and say, that's not what's happening, or I disagree with your version of events, because you know that you could be thrown in jail, and you're probably going to have a government-appointed attorney who's not going to have a lot of interest in energetically defending any rights. And then we end up with a case like a situation like Turkmenistan has been for years, where the government provided attorney comes in and starts out the court session by saying, it's a disgrace for me to have to defend this wretched person over here, but I'm required to come in and say something on their behalf.
Right.
Can I just add to that seconding what Bruce just said, that the implications of this for the rights of Tajik citizens are very great. One of the people that we mentioned in our report, at the end of our report, who luckily is not in prison but is under a lot of pressure, is someone I consider to be also one of Tajikistan's most fearless human rights defenders. Her name is Faizi Nisovahidova. She's been around for years as a fearless attorney and public commentator on all kinds of issues. You know, one of the cases that she took on about a year ago or about 2 years ago was the case of the detained PhD student that we all remember, Alexander Sadikov, who was arrested simply for doing research about conflict in Nagorno-Badakhshan. She took on his case when nobody would, and within a few days, he was moved from detention into house arrest. She had also earlier taken on the representation, if you remember this case, of a BBC reporter in northern Tajikistan, an Uzbek reporter who was also accused of extremism on trumped-up charges and was being tortured for several days until she forced the world to pay attention to this case, and was the reason, I think, that the government and the authorities had to stop torturing him and eventually let him go. And to have her under pressure and intimidated means that, you know, countless other citizens are now in harm's way.
Steve, thank you very much. Let's take a short break here. When we come back, we will discuss why regime is doing what it is doing against lawyers these days. Welcome back to the Majlis, the Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Today we are discussing recent wave of crackdown against lawyers in Tajikistan. Discussing the subject with me is Steve Sverdlo, Human Rights Watch, Central Asia researcher. Marius Fossum, Central Asia representative of Norwegian Helsinki Committee, is joining us. Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlag Awazi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, is also with me in the studio. I am Mohamed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bruce, I want to start with you. The timing of this crackdown is interesting. The country is faced with lots of economic pressure. And again, to be able to overcome with this pressure, Tajik government authorities needs help from the economic powers and institutions that are usually based in the West, where values such as human rights are an important subject. How do you read the timing?
Well, certainly it plays a big role in it. I mean, we shouldn't be so confused to think that this all started because of the economic problems, because we know, like Zaid Saidov's case, for instance, it dates back a couple of years. The government has been slowly preparing doing the groundwork for what's happening now. They might have speeded things up a little bit because they are having kind of an economic freefall at the moment, but the process that we're seeing now actually finds its origins several years back. There's no doubt about it. So I would say they speeded it up. Like I said, they quickened it a little bit because of the situation. They want less criticism, less voices that can criticize it. And certainly in the case of lawyers, it's kind of interesting because you can have critics and you can have opposition figures, but lawyers, by virtue of their training and everything like that, are used to making very logical arguments rooted in the Constitution and the laws of the land. So these are the kind of opponents which are especially troublesome to the government, because these people can cite articles in the Constitution. This is in violation. You know, you didn't respect this part of the Constitution, on and on. So they're a little bit different of a breed than, say, just a regular government critic who might just say, you know, the government's policies are repressive or something like that, and throw in a couple of examples of someone who might have run afoul of the authorities. But a lawyer will actually make an argument about why this is wrong. So it's not just a question of getting rid of critical voices. It's a question of getting rid of someone who can debate the law of the country against the government officials. And let's face it, a lot of government officials are probably not well versed in the law themselves. So this puts them in an awkward place. It's kind of the same thing as them arguing Islam with a legitimate cleric in the country, where chances are the official doesn't know very much about the religion, but certainly not as much as the mullah or the mufti or someone. And now they're in the same situation with the lawyers, where they can say, we've overlooked due process here, here, and here. And then the government has to come up with a response to that, so they don't look like that they're wrong in this argument.
Steve, you put out this report last week, and several days has passed since then. How has been the reaction by the international community on this subject?
Well, you know, we timed this report to actually come out just before Tajikistan's human rights record came up for discussion in Geneva at the UN Human Rights Council. And we were pleased to see that just a few days ago on Friday, in fact, many countries, not just Western ones, in fact, made strong statements about human rights violations in Tajikistan, including the harassment and the imprisonment of lawyers. And among them were the United States and Norway and several other states that came out fairly strongly. And the reason we were pleased by that was that despite this gruesome picture in Tajikistan, one thing that the Tajik government has done is they've displayed some level of cooperation with UN mechanisms. And in contrast to, let's say, Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan, Tajikistan has this year invited the UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Expression into the country, David Kaye, who came in March and paid a visit earlier. They have the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture. And, you know, from my time in Tajikistan, I've seen that some parts of the government seem at least to pay lip service to these UN human rights mechanisms. And so having, a shellacking occur on Friday, as it did, I think won't go unnoticed. And it certainly is, it is an important mechanism. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be immediate releases, but I think it ratchets up the pressure. And that's always the key factor, I think, in making progress.
Mm-hmm. Marius, lawyers are the latest target in Tajikistan before media, opposition, civil society, etc. They were already under enormous pressure. So going forward, what's your concern? Who might be the next target of Tajik authorities, looking back at what you have seen already happening in the country? Marius?
Well, I think journalists will soon find themselves in the crosshairs of the government, more so than already. I think the crackdown will extend to the media. Yeah, basically, I believe journalists would be next on the list after Glory.
Before ending the debate, Steve, I another legal question came to my mind. After this, the crackdown against the lawyers and also introduction of this test, where does this put the meaning of Tajikistan's constitution as a legal document?
Well, it puts it under threat. Of course, if you don't have lawyers able to do their job, then the whole system breaks down and collapses. No one can really, with a straight face in the government, say that they are living up to the standards in the constitution. And of course, we see that on May 22nd, there's going to be a very important referendum to that constitution. Yeah. And the questions that are going to be posed to citizens in a yes or no, up or down vote will be, I think, 40 changes to the Constitution that will include allowing President Rahmon to indefinitely remain in as president, lowering the presidential age from 35 to 30, allowing his son, perhaps, to take up the reins as president quite soon, if that option is something that the family wants to pursue. And also will forever ban any political parties based on religious lines, essentially sealing the door shut to the IRPT or anything like that, reemerging in politics. And so the Constitution right now is under great threat in Tajikistan. I think that's why what happened last week in Geneva at the Human Rights Council has to be taken up much, much more robustly going forward by Washington and Brussels and every other partner of Tajikistan. Right now, the IMF is playing a role. There may be discussions of a bailout or some sort of deal. So there are, you know, there are pressure points, there are important hooks coming up where these issues can be raised. And one other thing to just mention, in addition to the lawyers and the opposition members being imprisoned inside Tajikistan, is that we still see every week, Marius's organization and my organization are receiving reports that Tajik activists and others abroad are being detained in other countries. And there continue to be reports of people being extradited. We just heard of activists in Kazakhstan, Tajik activists in Kazakhstan being arrested, in Turkey, in Belarus. So that continues. And so what's required is an international response in several countries.
Mm. That's exactly the final point I wanted to ask you guys. Maybe, Bruce, you jump in here. So in this situation, when the lawyers are under pressure, media, opposition, all these civil society members are under pressure, so what is the best hope that this can be reversed?
Steve mentioned the IMF, and I think that's one of the key things, and individual cooperation or cooperation with individual governments too, is some of these organizations have to make it crystal clear that while they're willing to help Tajikistan out a little bit, they can't help a government which is increasingly repressive and keeps shifting its laws and now its constitution to just for the purposes of regime preservation. There has to be a line drawn there and say, you know, friends are friends because they have some common interests. And so you have to show us that you're willing to do something that we consider important, just as we're willing to help you out with something you consider important. And that's the kind of pressure they're really going to have to put to bear. And I know if financial organizations don't like to mix in politics, but this is a situation and a case here where I think there really has to be some standards beyond the fact that can you repay the loan and will you show greater financial transparency. They have to say, look, you have to have a functioning legal system that is respected the world over. I mean, this thing with the lawyers is actually violating UN principles. It's not just a question of, a sense of local fairness or anything like that. You're supposed to have access to a lawyer, you know, of your own choice if you can get one, and they have to be able to defend you to the best of their ability. You can't just remove one's successful lawyers that the government's considered to be a nuisance to their plans.
Last point, Marius, what are the available options for the international community to enforce change or influence the Tajik authorities to step back? And also, based on your own experience with the international community, do you think that they are open to use such tool to put pressure on Tajik authorities?
I believe the adequate response from the international community now to Dushanbe's abysmal human rights record has to be some kind of sanctions. And state actors tend to pursue and prefer quiet diplomacy and dialogue, and no one is opposed to that per se. I believe those can be good tools, but quiet diplomacy is not a purpose in and of itself, but a means to an end. And if we look at Tajikistan, our human rights situation has steadily worsened during recent years. It becomes pretty evident that quiet diplomacy, dialogue, and even public criticism have had little to no effect on the current situation. So that is why I believe the time has come to introduce sanctions. They could be targeted sanctions against key government officials complicit in gross human rights violations. We're talking about asset freezes and visa bans, etc.
My second part of my question was, Marius, the items that you mentioned in your report as a possible tool to discuss with the Tajik authorities or put some pressure on Tajik authorities, are they open to engage Tajik authorities with such kind of tools there on the ground?
Well, so far we haven't seen a huge willingness to introduce state sanctions, but we are hoping that based on our research and our findings and our advocacy, and that key international actors will open their eyes to the necessity of such tools.
Right, right. Okay, thank you very much, Marius Fossum, Central Asia representative of Norwegian Helsinki Committee. Also, Steve Sivertlu, Human Rights Watch, Central Asian researcher, and Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Uwazi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe. Thank you, gentlemen, for being part of the Majlis today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bye-bye.